The Acatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Acatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're taking on a genuinely massive subject. It's the entire history of human healing, really.
Yeah, it's all captured masterfully in William Bynum's landmark work, The History of Medicine.
It's huge.
It really is. And our mission, well, it's to kind of filter this monumental journey for you.
Mm-hmm.
We want to understand how humanity, you know, navigated the path from pretty primitive healing practices.
Rooted in ritual superstition.
Exactly. All the way to the molecular evidence-based system we kind of rely on today.
And Bynum, he immediately challenges that simple story most of us grew up with.
Right. The straight line.
Yeah, that medicine is just scientists marching from ignorance straight into the light. He argues modern medicine is actually the result of a profoundly complex, while often messy and deeply human story. It's this interplay between science, yes, but also huge social transformations, shifting cultural norms, and these sudden leaps in technology.
And that's crucial because it reframes medical progress.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't inevitable, you know. It was contingent.
Contingent.
The history shows that medicine is as much a story about, like, civilization and politics as it is about chemistry and anatomy. If you want to understand today's healthcare crises,
which we all do.
Right. You really have to understand the journey that created them.
Okay, so to understand the book, let's look at the author himself, William Bynum.
Yeah, he's Professor Emeritus of the History of Medicine at University College London, a leading authority for decades.
Well, what makes him stand out?
What makes him distinct, and I think what makes this book so powerful, is his dual training.
Ah.
He has deep expertise in both medicine and history. So he isn't just a historian reading old documents. He actually understands the clinical realities.
Right.
And the scientific principles of the practices he's critiquing.
That dual perspective, that's got to be everything.
It really is.
Because it lets him avoid that simple great men and great discoveries way of looking at things.
Exactly.
Instead, he focuses on the sociocultural context.
Yeah.
He's asking, why did this idea flourish here and now?
Or, you know, why was a brilliant breakthrough completely ignored for like 100 years?
Yeah.
Precisely. His work shifts the focus. It moves from just the lab bench to the broader human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And his writing, it's scholarly, sure, but it's remarkably accessible.
That's rare.
It is.
Yeah.
And really necessary when you're covering millennia of human effort.
Okay, let's jump into the structure then, this history. Bynum guides us chronologically, but also thematically.
Mm-hmm.
From prehistory, you know, when healing was all linked to magic and spirits, up to the 21st century age of genetics.
And his core thesis, it resonates throughout the whole book.
Hmm.
Medical progress has been utterly nonlinear, not a straight line at all.
Right.
And the historical journey is essential because the medical facts of any given era, well, they're inseparable from that era's dominant worldview.
Okay, explain that a bit.
Well, if the social structure isn't ready for a breakthrough, the breakthrough just won't stick. It doesn't matter how brilliant it is.
That concept really stuck with me, thinking about Galen. You know, his anatomical and physiological system from the 2nd century CE.
Dominated for 1,500 years.
1,500 years. And it wasn't because everyone was stupid, right?
No, not at all.
It was because Galen provided this comprehensive, intellectually satisfying system, the theory of the four humors.
Right. Blood, phlegm, yellow bile, black bile.
It just fit the prevailing philosophical and social understanding of what a human being was.
Exactly. It satisfied the need for a rational, naturalistic system. Because before this, diseases were largely seen as, you know, divine punishment or magical curses.
So the Hippocratic tradition, around 400 BCE, that was the big shift.
That was the radical claim. Diseases have natural causes.
So even though balancing blood, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile sounds, well, frankly, outlandish now.
It does.
Bynum says that shift itself, the idea that you could observe, diagnose, predict outcomes based on natural causes, that was the revolution. It created a systematic methodology.
It absolutely did. And Galen, he synthesized and codified all this Greek knowledge, added his own findings, and created the definitive system for centuries.
Okay, so fast forward, what about the medieval period?
But that's where we see how fragile this knowledge could be. In Europe, things kind of stagnated. Knowledge was mostly preserved in monasteries.
But elsewhere.
But in the Islamic Golden Age, you had scholars like Avicenna. They preserved, they expanded, they applied this knowledge, they advanced pharmacology, established the first real hospitals.
Wow.
Building on and translating those Greek texts.
It's amazing to realize that so much of the knowledge that eventually fueled the European Renaissance actually came back through Arabic translations.
It did.
So how did medicine finally break that intellectual chokehold Galen had for a millennium and a half?
It really took two huge steps, both rooted in that Renaissance idea of valuing direct human observation over just ancient texts.
Okay, step one.
Step one. Andreas Vesalius, 1543. He insisted on dissecting human bodies.
Not animals.
Not animals, which is what Galen had mostly relied on. Vesalius demonstrated hundreds of Galen's anatomical errors. This was a profound shift.
How so?
Because the authority of the ancient word was being replaced by the authority of the observable fact.
Right.
What you could see with your own eyes.
Okay, so Vesalius corrected the anatomy, the map of the body, so to speak.
Right.
Who finally gave medicine a completely new operating manual. Who broke the physiological model, how the body worked.
That would be William Harvey, 1628, his demonstration of the circulation of the blood.
The heart as a pump.
Exactly. It completely overturned Galenic physiology, which believed blood was somehow consumed by the tissues. Harvey applied principles of mechanics to biology. The heart's a pump. The body's a kind of machine.
That wasn't just a correction.
No, it was a fundamental paradigm shift toward mechanical science.
Yeah.
Viewing the body differently.
That idea, the body as a machine, that must have felt both, I don't know, terrifying and incredibly liberating at the same time.
Probably.
What did that mechanical worldview allow the next generation to focus on then?
Well, it shifted the location of disease. In the 18th and 19th centuries, disease moves away from being a systemic imbalance, like the humors.
Right, all of them.
Being a localized pathology, something wrong with a specific organ. This was really driven by the rise of the organized hospital, the Paris Clinic.
That makes perfect sense. Suddenly, doctors had large groups of patients. They could compare symptoms during life with what they found on the autopsy table.
Exactly. Correlating illness with physical damage.
And that empirical correlation was then, quite literally, brought inside the living body with the invention of the stethoscope.
Yes. René Linnéac, 1816.
Such a simple tool, relatively speaking.
A low-tech tool that profoundly changed diagnosis. Suddenly, internal organs became accessible in a new way.
But the next truly explosive change, the one that really defined modern medicine as we know it, that was the germ theory revolution, right?
Oh, absolutely. Pioneered by Pasteur and Koch.
This is where medicine finally found its clear, quantifiable enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Before germ theory, doctors still thought diseases might be caused by, what, bad air? Miasma?
Miasma theory, yeah. It persisted for a long time. But once the scientific basis for infectious disease became clear, these microorganisms, the impact was immediate and sweeping.
What kind of changes?
Everything. Antisepsis, thanks to Lister, mandatory sanitation, clean water policies, public health infrastructure on a massive scale.
Wow.
All these huge life-saving reforms stemmed directly from that one scientific entity. Germs cause specific diseases.
And Bynum makes a fascinating point, right, that this really set the stage for the 20th century.
It did. It led into the age of the magic bullet, starting with Alexander Fleming's discovery of penicillin.
Which, in turn, paved the way for the ultimate internal focus.
The molecular level. The discovery of DNA by Watson and Crick in 1953.
Shifting the medical gaze from the microbial enemy outside to our own molecular code inside, genetics.
It's an incredible timeline when you lay it out like that.
It really is.
So now that we've kind of flown through the chronology, let's zoom out a bit.
Mm.
Bynum identifies these key themes that connect this history directly to the challenges we face in healthcare today.
Yeah, let's get into those. One theme that really stands out is this tension between tradition and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Bynum gives the heartbreaking case study of Ignaz Semmelweis.
Ah, yes. Hand washing.
In the 1840s, he realized that doctors doing autopsies and then delivering babies without washing their hands were causing childbed fever. He instituted hand washing.
And his solution, a really simple behavioral change, it slashed mortality rates dramatically.
Fact.
But he was ridiculed, rejected by the medical establishment.
Why? The data was clear.
Not because his data was bad. It was because of non-scientific factors, professional pride, social hierarchies. The idea that they, high-status physicians, could be the source of disease was just unbearable.
It just shows how difficult it is to change human behavior, doesn't it? Even with life-saving evidence right there.
Absolutely.
Okay, another powerful theme. the social construction of knowledge.
Right. We tend to think of medical facts as these absolute objective truths.
Yeah, like they just exist out there.
But Bynum demonstrates they're deeply shaped by context. The questions researchers choose to ask, which populations they study, even how they interpret the data.
It's all influenced by subjective human factors, culture, biases.
Exactly. And we absolutely have to talk about Bynum's massive point about public health.
This one really hit home for me.
He argues, very convincingly, that the greatest gains in human longevity over the last two centuries, they didn't come from the high-tech surgical breakthroughs or the fancy new drugs.
No.
No, they came from low-tech public health measures. Clean water, effective sanitation, basic nutrition.
That really grounds you, doesn't it? It makes you rethink where the big impacts come from.
It does. And finally, there's the double-edged nature of progress.
Meaning?
Meaning we solve one problem, like bacterial infections with antibiotics.
And we immediately create a new, maybe even bigger one.
Right. Antibiotic resistance. Or we get much better at saving lives. People live longer.
Which is great.
Which is great. But then we create the modern challenge of managing an aging population dealing with chronic, long-term diseases. Every solution creates new challenges.
Bynum has such a fantastic way of boiling these complex ideas down into memorable phrases.
He really does. Let's look at a few of those like key quotes or ideas.
Okay, here's one that defines the scope of his work. Disease is older than humanity, but medicine is a human creation.
Yeah, that immediately frames it, doesn't it? Medicine isn't just biology. It's a unique intellectual and social achievement. The challenge is biological, sure, but our systematic response, that's completely cultural.
Okay, next one. Every age gets the medicine it deserves, shaped by its dominant ideas, available technologies, and social structures.
This really reinforces that nonlinear path we talked about. Our medicine is like a mirror reflecting our society at that time.
So it explains why we had the humoral theory when philosophy dominated.
Exactly. And why we have genetic sequencing now that technology and molecular biology dominate. It fits the worldview.
And finally, medical progress is not a steady march toward truth, but a series of revolutions interrupted by periods of stagnation and sometimes regression.
Oof. That's the ultimate call for intellectual humility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bynum forces us to acknowledge that sometimes we go backward or we spend centuries perfecting systems that are, well, fundamentally flawed. Progress isn't guaranteed.
So if you're listening to this, how does understanding all this history actually change anything for you today? Bynum's framework offers some really powerful real-life applications.
Yeah, absolutely. Application one, empowered patienthood. Think about it. If you understand that the doctor-patient relationship has historically been one of sort of authoritarian expert telling a passive recipient what to do,
which it often was,
then you're empowered to view that encounter today as more of a partnership. This history gives you the context to, you know, better advocate for yourself, ask critical questions.
Okay, that makes sense.
Application two, cultivating healthy skepticism. Knowing that medical dogma has changed radically over time and that brilliant people like Galen were fundamentally wrong for 1,500 years, that helps you evaluate the barrage of health information you get today.
From the internet? From ads?
Everywhere. You can maybe better distinguish between established scientific consensus and claims driven more by marketing, or just very preliminary research.
Don't just accept everything at face value.
Exactly. And the final really critical application is just acknowledging the importance of low-tech health.
Back to public health.
Yeah. The book is this constant reminder that while we celebrate the latest surgical robot or gene therapy, often the most powerful steps you can take for your own health, good nutrition, exercise, access to clean environments, these are the foundations established centuries ago. Not always the complex, high-tech interventions of today.
So my personal takeaway from this deep dive, I think it was really appreciating the enduring influence of that early Hippocratic approach.
Even the humoral theory.
Yeah, even though the humoral theory itself was factually incorrect, that insistence on observation, on prognosis, on trying to find natural causes, it gave physicians a rational way to approach illness. It provided comfort and care, even if the underlying science was wrong.
That's a great point. It makes you respect the past, even with our modern hindsight.
Exactly. What about you?
For me, the final synthesis is how Bynum shows medicine is simultaneously cumulative. It really does build on past discoveries, like anatomy, and yet deeply contingent.
Contingent on.
Subject to every social, cultural, economic influence of its time. And his point is, for medicine to truly progress in the future, it has to integrate that rigorous science with a thoughtful consideration of these broader human values and needs. It can't just be about the tech.
That's a powerful thought.
And maybe a final provocative thought for you, the listener. Understanding medicine's past really gives you the intellectual tools to think critically about the health information you encounter every single day. And maybe it helps you contribute more constructively to the evolution of healthcare systems, which, let's face it, still desperately need improvement.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.